You're listening to Asheville FM at WSFM LP 103.3 Asheville. This is News Team correspondent Emma Hutchins, and today I'm speaking with Tracy DeBrule, who is a candidate for Buncombe County Sheriff. Welcome.
Libertarian Party. All right. Trying to open the gates so we actually have another option, not trapped between the left and right.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself. How long have you lived in Buncombe County?
Well, since day one. I was born at a mission hospital. Jack of all trades, master of none. I play music. I've got a small billboard market that I run, built for my family and got my small part of. I've always did construction. I was in the Marines. I was your Toys for Tots guy when we used to dangle the van on Patton Avenue and raffle the Harley off and do all that. Let's see, last Sunday, I was out with the church, helping down at Haywood Church, doing the feeding of the homeless. I think 250-something homeless. On Wednesday, they said they'd done 500. So,
wow.
If you about name it, I work out at the Y regularly.
Why did you decide to run for this position?
I figure I've already been doing the job for them, so I might as well get paid for it. Well, the evidence room audit that went a few years back, that got opened because the guy that robbed my mom turned state's evidence. I was reenlisted in the Marine Corps, and it would have been the reenlistment that would have carried me to be eligible for retirement last November. But when I spoke up, they weren't grateful. there was some retaliation. And, there's some bittersweet parts of it. It tied up my reenlistment by the time the FBI stepped in and cleared it up to where I could reenlist. I was like, whoa, I ain't going to put my life on the line for such cheap pay. And this going on at home, you know. Bob Bingham, he was a fellow Marine. I didn't know him like that. Michael Allen was an Army reservist, the two that was in the initial. And Michael Allen actually told the truth on the stand. They charged me with refusing to blow when I asked for my right to an attorney. I'd actually watched, in the Marines we have BAC training a year long. Actually, in the Marines we have all the federal trainings and the handling procedures, which actually I helped change because we used to have the line training. I was an MMA fighter under Johnny Husky and Billy Wicks. And as I was tapping out my instructors here on the East Coast, the Cardo Urso, a UFC referee, on the West Coast was turning around and pushing for them to adapt different procedures, and now all the military uses them. The stuff like you saw where the guy was held down and beat in the streets, you would not do that if you were a trained officer. And I think it's, they go for a few months at AB Tech, and they're like, all right, here you go. Well, when we went to Paris Island, the initial part was just to tear us down to where we forgot, our drill instructor said, forget all this high school mentality. Forget everything you know. You're in the real world now. Lives depend on what you're doing. And so I saw what was going on here, and it's not the pretty story you want to imagine. We saw it in the 50s. They had to fight for it. In the 70s, they had to fight for it. We made it through the 80s and 90s. I think gang violence was the biggest thing we had then. And then, boom, we're going through all sorts of social and civil disruption again. The Brailsford case, Chris Dorner, all those things. If there was actually true integrity behind it instead of just some word they put on a poster, then those things wouldn't have happened. Chris Dorner was in the Navy. He was an LAPD officer, and he spoke up. The end result, it cost LA $4.7 million in lawsuits. There was 11 lives lost, and all they had to do is turn around and take him serious when he turned and he said, hey, this is wrong. And the end result, they actually said 8 officers was doing exactly what he was trying to get him charged for, and they never charged him. When the officers turn around, you got kids, 18-year-old kids, that they will turn around and run through the system, lock up, ruin their lives and their careers. But our officers, they're 40-year-old men with bulletproof vests and a pistol on their side, and they'll do wrong, and they turn the other cheek. There is so many young men and women out there that would love to actually have a career working for the community. And what do?
Can you talk more about the issues that you plan to highlight in your campaign and in your work?
We're in a primary. There's primary runs right now. There's 7 or 8 of us now, and a lot of people, I've got the feeling, are looking for ideas. with my experience in training, I've got over 20 years, from the time I met Pops, the time I joined the Marines and did everything. There's equipment we don't have. There's setups we don't have. I've seen them firsthand. None of our officers here have. unless they were where I was doing what I was doing. I was with Headquarters Marine Corps. On my civilian work, I was with Trammell Crow and Jones Lang LaSalle. So as far as logistics and coordination, those are the two largest landowners in the U.S. I ran 100 contractors nationwide for many years. To actually say what I'm going to do the day afterwards I'm elected, I'm going to have a meeting. And I'm going to invite y'all, News 13, you know, every bit of the press there, and I'll give you the play-by-play. I mean, it's all locked away right here. Sit here and broadcast it right now. No, I'm not playing main party, so they're going to outspend me. They're going to take, if you throw out a good idea, they're going to take their own variation with no experience behind it.
What do you want to accomplish if you're elected?
I want a Nobel Peace Prize. And I mean, literally, to put in effect what I planned on doing, I've got a friend of mine who's a councilman in Charlotte, for instance. I'm going to take it to him. I'm going to say, hey, Matt, look at this. What do you think? You know, it's working. I've got the blueprint. This is how our officers are performing. I figure about 6 months is what it's going to take to start running them through what I went through when I was 18. And not at Paris Island, ironically. But when I turn around and go through that, get it to Winston-Salem, Charlotte. I know there are areas that will listen to me, that I've got connections down there, other Marines throughout the area. And as they catch up, I'd say probably change the statewide dynamics on how we operate. My bigger picture is I don't plan on being a career sheriff. I love the idea. I mean, Pops, my trainer, was retired training officer for the Memphis Sheriff's Department. Actually, he's the guy that taught Elvis to wrestle also. But in doing all that, my next step from there, I see that there's issues with APD. If Miss Hooper ain't going to step up, then I'll probably be shooting for her job next as soon as I get the blueprint set within the Sheriff's Department. If it needs to go statewide, I might actually shoot up for Raleigh or something until it catches on to where we're not seeing the things we're seeing. I noticed one issue about the female violence and stuff like that. Real men don't do that. And actually, to all the ladies out there, one of the cases that got me involved was a 100-pound girl. Three sheriff's officers turned around and pushed between her knees. She's sitting Indian-style on her porch. They pushed her between her knees. She said it hurt, so she went to lay out. And they started kicking the fire out of her, holding her wrist down. When they came to my house the December 27, 2012, a month afterwards I got done running for county commission, the sheriff turned around, knocked on my door, said my mom was hurt. When I opened the door, they drug me to the ground. They was holding me, arm bar on my right arm, had a key lock on the left arm where his knee was right here on my elbow and his hand was on the other side to where I couldn't remove my arm. He had his right hand holding my cheek to the ground. The officer that knocked was tasing me in the back, and the fourth one was sitting there kicking me in the back of the head. That is not training. He kicked me four times, actually, and because I had a little porch on my trailer, he actually fell off the back banister because there was nothing to catch him. If he had been standing on both feet, he would have never even fell, which was a liability to the sheriff's office even. And these cases, what the powers that are now, and I filed the court paperwork. I filed it, and I went to the ACLU, the NAACP, and all these different programs turn around and say, all right, here's what's going on. This is not constitutional, you know. Where are my rights? And everybody was so gung-ho. We're going to do something about this. And then it got quiet. And then January last year, the VA hospital, the Wounded Warrior Project, it got up. Yes, I am a Wounded Warrior. Broke rib, blown disc, nothing major. But they took in the Wounded Warrior Project got up with VA hospital, and they was getting me legal help. And when I turned around and the notes came in January-wise, I think it was like end of March when I was sitting there flipping through the paperwork, and I saw that it turned around. It was 3 weeks before Van Duncan announced he's quitting, because the paperwork, they actually claimed I was on Facebook trying to get suicide by cop. Well, my mom printed out my fate when I got to the hospital that night. My mom turned around and I said, something's wrong. I was on Facebook speaking against the evidence room again. And I said, will you print my Facebook page out? And she did. And we had right there in black and white, a friend of mine turned around and said, trying to get the cops caught, are you suicidal? And I hate that word. Anytime anybody ever mentions that, to degrade it in society's eyes, I talk horribly about it. I've lost way too many friends that way. And so I turn around and say, I said that no, suicide is for, and if you remember that word that Trump used, reflects a kitty cat, I guess, that I said suicides for that. There was no point. I was talking to officers. I was talking to a Marine from when I was a light armored recon down there. And Queen turned around and he said, you know, something you can't change. You're mad about this, something the cops did that you can't change. Well, here I am trying to change it.
The mayor regularly noted last year on the campaign trail that, quote, no city in North Carolina is a sanctuary city because the counties run the jails, end quote. It might be helpful if you could speak to whether or not you would support Buncombe being named a sanctuary county and to what extent your office would work with ICE.
Well, first of all, a name's a name. Don't mean nothing until we actually apply it. We don't have to be called a sanctuary city. If you look throughout our community, like I was talking up here at the Haywood Church where they're feeding the homeless and stuff like that, we're getting there. As far as working with ICE, that more goes from my understanding on the drug issues. And over the past year, actually, last October, I was asked to play bass with a rock band. And I was hanging out with these young men, and, you know, at first it don't present itself. And I noticed out of the three of them, there was two young men who were carrying on with their life like this is normal for them, and you start noticing it. And they're on methadone, the way to get them clean, and they thought this is normal for them. And the third one, bless his heart, he's a great guitarist. He's a big kid at heart, and I love him to death. He was on meth, actually, you know, crystal meth, and he's been clean now. Thanks, I'd say heavily, because of sitting there and saying, hey, is this who you want to be? Expressing to him that there's more to life and he can be it. And I know another young man that we got clean also. I won't claim the majority on that, but I know that it played effect. And actually, I seen him, he hugged and cried. He said, I've been about 6 months clean, you know, and he teared up. And actually, they call him Spider-Man, and he didn't even know it. There was another addict who'd got clean, and they were actually trying to run him out of town, and they used the cases against this guy to tie them both together. And they hadn't seen each other in 3 years. the way you communicate with those people and the way you help them out is you lift your neighbors up. I heard one of our candidates, one of the guys running for office, turn around and say, yeah, I'd turn around and I'd go in there and I'd let him know that he quits now or we're going to haul him off to jail and leave his doors unlocked and broadcast down the street that his house is unlocked. And I was sitting there thinking, wow, that's a huge liability to the county. You know, you have to approach, there is no simple solution. You have to approach every single situation individually. The officers need to be taught to look at it that way. They need to be taught that they are dealing with human beings and they're not in charge. There is no bully mentality. There's no, you are a civil servant. Your job is to serve. Whether it's an elderly lady needing a hand crossing the street, a Girl Scout, turn around and if the wind blows her cookie boxes over, you help her stack them back up, you know?
Do you believe that there is a trust issue with law enforcement and people in communities of color? And if so, how do you plan to build trust?
First of all, absolutely. And it's not just in color. We're seeing it's in every community. Actually, it's not even a black and white issue. It's a rich and poor issue. The poor, those who, you know, you got somebody backwoods talk a little bit like this, and them hillbillies turn around, you put them in front of an authority figure who has that bully mentality, especially, they're not going to mesh. as far as the African-American culture, I will say this. You generally see their men are stronger and bigger built, and they actually have more drive in them than I see a lot of white people, my own people, I guess, say, everyone considered. I claim to be half black from the waist up, right here in the head where it matters, because I was raised, my first boss is Mr. Matt and Reverend Waters for 3 years. My dad's house in South Charlotte was robbed 4 times, and the fourth time they shot a friend of ours, Johnny, 4 times. The fourth bullet, they actually knocked on the door when he pulled it up with the chain link. They shot him in the foot immediately. Where's the money at? They thought because Dad had a dually truck, which he pulled the materials with and had made payments on like everyone else. But every time he'd say no obble English, they'd turn around and shoot him again. And the fourth time they shot him right here in the cheek and it traced and came out the ear and he played dead. Directly after that, some seniors. I was going into my freshman year. They asked me to go help do their senior prank with them. And I didn't even know how to spell the word to show how naive I was, but I wrote tiger with an N on our school building when they were originally, I was just the lookout up there, and we were supposed to be toilet paper. But when they brought me down there and handed me the spray paint, oh, in a little, you're in a lot. Here you go, kid. Well, I did 100 hours community service for it. I owned up to it. And afterwards, I got done working for Houston. There was a, I guess you'd call him a black man, Mr. Mapp, if you want. I never see him like that. He was like a second father to me in a lot of ways, and Reverend Waters. And he turned and he hired me. And a few weeks in, all choked up. You know, I went in there, Mr. Mapp, you know, my tail between my legs, because I realized they were the ones that cleaned up that mess. And Mr. Mapp turned around and he said, he cut me off cold. He said, it's not about where you've been, it's about where you're going, son. And that's a lot of reason I joined the Marines. Their culture, a lot of that culture, I guess, say, a lot of what you see, a lot of it's getting to be, I'd say, a lot of it, the youth in their own minds, but a lot of it still is there, especially when you get, and it's the bully aspect, being told what to do by cops. If you ask, you'll get so much more done. And I go on for days about that subject because it's been a major factor in what built me. Minnie Jones was a good friend of mine. She'd marched with Dr. King. I used to spend hours on the phone with her. And as far as, you know, it's not a skin issue, even though they do see it more. It's mainly the sections they live in and the cops running in insecure. The inadequacies of the officers builds that a lot. And I hope for the African-American community out there, I hope they see that. And I hope when you deal with those officers, you actually don't hate them, pity them. Try to teach them better.
The open data policing website that tracks all traffic stops in North Carolina indicates definitive and clear racial profiling across all counties in the state. And as sheriff, what are your plans to address this issue, specifically around traffic stops?
There's an equipment issue on that hand also that I don't really want to divulge. But I was with Strikers, and a lot of the way you approach can get you a lot better results. As far as we got a great DUI task force, is the way they set up and stuff like that. You know, I'm not going to completely knock our officers out there. There's a lot of good ones out there. There's a lot of my friends actually. We'll all work together. Just, you know, a lot of it is knowing what you walk into. A lot of it's having the reconnaissance, the information, and then it's how you approach the people you're dealing with. Once those issues are solved, you know, as long as there's guns and drugs out there in the world, yeah, there are going to be issues because people don't think clearly when they're operating like that. There are programs, there are ways, and I do know how to instate them.
Some counties in North Carolina have adopted local policy revisions to reduce disproportionate rate of African Americans and people of color being pulled over and searched. So those policies can look like prioritizing regulatory stops or requiring written consent. Do you think that this type of policy revision is effective?
Well, you got to look at it this way. If you're driving a nice new Beamer, how well likely are you getting pulled as if you're driving a beat up jalopy with a taillight out? Like I said, it's not a black and white, it's a rich and poor issue. And it always will be. It always has been. If you're driving down the road, questionable, then you're more likely to run across an officer because they're out there looking for lights out. They're looking for people speeding. You know, if you got your music cranked up and you're going down the road, sometimes your foot gets a little heavy as you're jamming out to it, you know? I've done it myself. My buddy Dirty Souls, their new album, especially, I find myself having to tone it down, you know. The little church-going crowd, you know what I mean? The little grandmas and grandpas, you know, they're sitting there listening to Billy Graham. Their foot's not getting as heavy because they're not as fed up in the moment. A lot of that feeds into those things and recognizing that does, and having the community recognize that also. Once again, try to help each other up. You see somebody, their tail lights out. Hey neighbor, and if they're too broke, man, I wish as soon as I could afford it. Hey, you know what? I got an extra taillight in my, or an extra light bulb in my car, or something like that. Or I know a guy down here that can help you out. with that wiring issue. Little things like that will go a long way. You know, the solution to everything we're dealing with is one word, community. When I was in Norway, moonshine's illegal. They had the steel sitting on the porch. And you're like, wow, that's crazy. We're sitting outside and there's a Norwegian. He's drunk and passed out on the side of the building. Here comes the cop up, right? Their sheriff. And we're like, you know, whoop, whoop. he goes, what does that mean? He says, oh, you're taking him to jail. He says, no, I'm taking him home. Where else do you go when you're drunk? when we was in the club, there was a, you know, here we are, a bunch of jarheads, all rough and tough, right? And this 18-year-old man, and I have to call him a man because here we are, you know, all fit and working out and all that and being boisterous and all that with these big old pints in our hands like we're king of the world. And this 18-year-old man walks up to us and he goes, why do you treat your friend so bad? And I did not know the Marine that was with us. There was six from my section that ended up in that. And he was one of the guys from New York, and the other guys was wrestling him. I said, excuse me? He says, yes. He says, my friend's drunk like that. I take him home. Why do you treat your friend so poor? Community. That's the, you take care of one another. You know?
In your opinion, what are the most effective forms of accountability regarding racial equity within Buncombe County Sheriff's Office?
When it comes to HOP, there is no accountability. You know, we're seeing it firsthand. It took last night up at that church meeting for the community meeting with the guy that was held down punched in the head. It took people ranting and screaming and all that. And if you watch the news report on it, everybody that's sitting in there that was on the command side, one thing I didn't hear Miss Hooper say is we're going to charge him. That's one thing I didn't see any of the officers step up and say. Hey, how can you teach a kid when you're not willing to do it to your own?
At the end of your first term as Buncombe County Sheriff, what is going to be different with the relationship of law enforcement and communities of color?
The communication. I'm going to have my officers a lot better prepared and a lot better. It's going to start just little things. I'm going to have my officers out there in PVA, Shiloh, whatever, Hillcrest, you know what I mean? I'm going to have them go out there on their free time, and I'll have them go out there and play ball in the communities and get to know the people. Yeah. You want to solve an issue with a group of people, you can't do it as an outsider.
Do you support the construction of the new Buncombe County Jail?
They're doing another one? Wow. That thing just went up a few years ago. If we need it. I'm one that believes we need less people in jail, and I know that there's a monetary system to where we're making bank. If you saw the budget meeting we just had Friday, it's ridiculous how much money flows through. I would dare say just in income tax alone, Buncombe County puts out $1 billion. In 2012, when we ran the numbers, it was somewhere on the excess of $800 million. That's not counting sales tax and vehicle and property taxes, all that other stuff. A lot of the young men, when I was in there, I saw a lot of them didn't need to be there. A lot of them had little things that they kept pulling back and forth. When I went through, it was supposed to be a four-month max. They kept dragging me back and forth for 7.5 months. And then they used 2012 statutes on a 2010 case, which is grandfather clause. You can't do that, but they did anyway. And what it is every time day you're in there, every time there's federal and there's payouts that goes to the jail and the county. Well, the reason they're needing this money is because they're out there instigating stuff. If you're not instigating it to where you need the funds for it, then maybe that little bit that's coming in on the jail, you can learn to do without. That's one thing I can say. I'm running my campaign. I make $6,000 a year before expenses. It cost me $1,300 to turn around and to put my name on this piece of paper. $300, and thank God for Mom. Actually, she went and got the signs for me, and I'll pay her back as it goes. I always have. But $380 for signs last night. You know, but I can manage on that. I can live on that. I was smart enough when I had the money coming in to pay my stuff off. You know, the jail, that's a big, expensive project. First thing is I need to look at is there a need for it? You know, there was a lot of room when I was down there, and there's a lot of areas in the counties I saw not being used. That's going to be probably my first couple days on the job. I know the square footage, but I actually want to see for myself how they're being occupied at this point in time.
Will you support a wider CIT, that's a crisis intervention team, training for police officers to handle mental health concerns with de-escalation versus use of force tactics?
Wow. Yeah. Here's a great question. When I was beat by the sheriffs, they held me at Mission Hospital without getting denying us the physical, the pictures of the bruises, the handprints around my neck, the bruises on my head. The mental health issue. One thing I saw when I went through there, because that's the side of the house they held me on to keep me from, you know, getting out there. Shannon Duncan is a high up with Mission Hospital. I don't know if that correlation is the reason they denied us the proof and all the things, but you can put two in together if you want. As far as mental health, and we saw it just now recently in Florida, that kid, they diagnosed him as ADHD. They said there's something wrong with you and gave him pills, thus alienating him from everybody else. Oh, because there's something wrong from him. You know what ADHD means? That means he's hyper. How many kids are hyper, and how many doctors are not boring? You put a kid with a lot of energy in front of a doctor that's not boring, and then you give him drugs and think it's going to solve things. No, there's, I hate to use the term, but in the Marines, that whole grow up thing, the Paris Island thing, when these kids go through college, they teach them, this is how you're supposed to think. And in the Marine Corps, it's the most dangerous weapon on the field is a free thinking Marine. You know, you're supposed to be on your own thought process. You're supposed to be able to process what's going on and you know, register the situation as it needs to be addressed. These kids go down there and they dope them up and stuff like that, and then it alienates them from the other kids. If you want to talk about ADHD, you go to Paris Island for one day. They go to bed at midnight. They're up at 4 o'clock in the morning. They run 5 miles. They do an obstacle course. Then they sit through classes. And then they go back and do another type of hand-to-hand combat training. You get around me. Afterwards, I came out of Paris Island, and you cannot keep up. Well, that's all ADHD kids are. But this kid sat there and got alienated. And I seen it. My baby mama was sitting up there at the ball court, and I seen this also. And this is another thing that message needs to get out there. She's sitting there, kids on the court, and she's watching the game. And there's a circle around her where everybody else is sitting there, and all those parents were on their cell phones, sitting there typing and Facebooking to each other, right? Not even paying attention to the game they brought their kids to. And how much you want to bet the reason that she's sitting out there by herself is because those people are turning around and texting each other. Oh, that's so-and-so. They did this. That's so-and-so. They did that. Me, personally, I listen to punk rock a lot, and I like to throw it back at people just to get them to think, because you can't tell somebody that's wrong and then register it, right? So here they are alienating. And I heard her cry. You know what I mean? I tried to be there. She's like, no, I just want this over. You know, the season's about over. At what point could any one of those people around them turn and notice she was sitting by herself and took their cell phone and said, hey, look at that young girl over there. I'm going to get off his phone. I'm going to put my arm around her neck. Or, hey, why don't y'all join me sitting over next to, I'll leave her name out of it and all that. But, you know, and that's where these kids start getting alienated. They feel they have nowhere to reach out to. It ain't any more drugs. It ain't any more mental health. It's about actually having the people who are diagnosing them being able to understand the kids and being able to relate to the kids enough to where the kids say, hey, you know, my niece and nephew, they look at me like I walk 10 foot tall and bulletproof. When I say something, they listen because I built that rapport with them. I didn't just throw them pills and say, here's your solution.
Recently, U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions said, quote, the sheriff is a critical part of the Anglo-American heritage of law enforcement, end quote, to the National Sheriff's Association in Washington. Do you agree with Sessions' statement?
Anglo-American. First of all, the sheriff is a critical part to the protection of our society. And as far as what basis you want to look at it, I got a little Cherokee in me. You know what? There's Cherokee sheriffs sitting right up there in Cherokee County. You know what I mean? And they're a vital part of their community. As far as what he means by the Anglo-American heritage of law enforcement. No, that's just bad training brought into bad training. the bully mentality passed on, the bully mentality. And in my reserve units, when I did the reserve time, I'd say 75, at least 50, if not 75% are law enforcement. We are trained by cops. We are trained by FBI. When I was in Quantico, I helped train the FBI, and we train cops, you know what I mean, when we're out there. And it's a working community on that. And, yeah, I heard the cops turn around and say, yeah, so-and-so, remember him? Oh, we gave him 2 what-fours or something like that. Well, you know, somebody in that crowd has to be the guy to say, why would you do such a thing if you're supposed to be the good guys? You know, that's a mental thought. It has nothing to do with skin. It has to do with the fact that Michael Brown case, prime example. You've got a 200-pound 18-year-old boy, and you've got a 150-pound officer. He sees the size. He's intimidated. He's scared. When I was stepped into that ring, Chris Rogers was 250-300 pounds. I was 150 pounds. And I gave him everything I had as he whooped my butt. However, if that officer would have turned around and not went for the gun, not been scared that this is his weapon. Your weapon's never on your belt, by the way. Do you know where your weapon is? Right here in your head. Your weapon's right here in your heart. You know? You could tie up that 18-year-old boy until your reinforcement helps you get the handcuffs on him. It's not a skin thing. It's a mental thing on the officer's training. I know how to sweat it out of them.
All right, we're almost done. What else would you like people to know about your candidacy?
Been there, done that, wrote the book. This is my home, and you know, music's my passion. I love being on that stage. It calls to me every waking moment. But you know, there's a promise I made to Corps. There's a young man, Jamie Lynch, who didn't make it to training. He fell asleep behind the wheel, got off work at midnight, had to be in Raleigh at 4. He switched to the dark side of the Army. And, you know, I owe a promise to him. I owe a promise to little Joe Ray. 6 caskets I carried. In a lot of ways, I owe a promise to Bob Bingaman, whether he was carrying it out or not. You know, I owe it to the Marine Corps. I owe it to this country. I owe it to every one of y'all to get out there and to make these things better. And I've been doing it. For y'all who've been paying attention, you have seen me in these streets helping out. You've seen me speaking out every moment I could. I just wish y'all would actually help us step out of the side of the box. Being trapped between Clinton and Trump again, if a third party is as we break through new doors, those issues will cease to exist. They'll have to start playing serious at a minimal. Oh, instead of pushing social issues, now we got to focus on actually having a... Why don't we ever see a Nobel Peace Prize candidate running for governor, mayor, or anything like that? You know, why are we getting people who only have their own pocket in mind? And there is some pay adjustment I plan on doing. There is a pay system that we don't use. Since the budget will be my choice, and I'm not looking at firing any of the officers in place. I don't believe in wasting. I believe in building quality with what we have. I hope I have all your support. God bless you, each and every single one. Come out and see us. I'll be with Roots at the Highland tonight. You know, y'all my community, and I hope y'all have the faith in me. I know I've not been a saint my whole life. I know I've said and done the things to twist and push buttons to get people to think and you know, to stop these things we're seeing, and open people's eyes. You know, once it says, the Bible says, how can you turn around and see the plank in my eye with a board in yours? You know, start pulling those things out. Start helping one another see the reality of things, and we'll be a better society, point blank. God bless you. Have a good one.
One more thing.
Okay.
If people would like to learn more about your candidacy, where can they look? Do you have a website?
Okay, they threw the name out to me yesterday. It's a work in progress. Like I said, I'm doing this out of my own pocket, so coming up with the little things, you know, it took us signs. We just got our signs ordered last night. It's going to be Libertarian, LPNC, TracyDeBruhl.org, something like that. Yes, there will be Tracy, go to Facebook and find Tracy DeBrule. Go to, and I probably got to check on a little bit, but go to, if you're on YouTube, I do have Phoenix Brawl on my, I do have some of my campaign videos talking about showing stuff, showing the hard proof about the things I've been talking about, and even a little bit of my music. As you're closing out, can we close with one?
Sure.
All right.
Yep.
Everybody, band name's Phoenix Brawl. It's called Heaven to Hold. It seems what we got here is a way to know future. If we don't wake up and learn to face the truth, she said, is it me and you? I said, not this time. Sure was hard to do when I turned her free to fly. 'Cause every change in the wind can be a new beginning. We just got to get off this road. So listen close, my friends, and we'll find a newer meaning. And on to a true heaven to hold. We see it on the news, every day's restless page. These twisted government views, the true criminals are getting their way. They say to erase what's old until there's no history told. But if we dare forget, we'll have to live through hell again. Every change in the wind can be a new beginning. We just got to get on that road. So listen close, my friends, and we'll find a truer meaning. And on to a new heaven to hold. Yeah, my granddad said you must learn from your mistakes, or you will be doomed to repeat them day by day by day. If you don't man up and learn to see what's wrong, those will be the things our kids struggle on. Man, I'm gone. Change in the wind can be a new beginning. We just got to get on that road. So listen close, my friends, and we'll find a newer meaning. And on to a true. And on to a new heaven to hold.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.